Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and happy Monday. So nice to be with you today. Get your week started, to get your day going. Get the coffee on, get the toast in the toaster, and let's get our day started together. Awfully glad you're with me, and I hope you had a great weekend. I was a little bit still under the weather. These doctors mean it when they say it takes about 10 days for this cold virus to run its course, and I think I'm at about day nine, so it's hopefully going to be through soon. And if you have gone through something like this yourself, and you got zapped with a little bit of that cold and flu, what did God teach you in that downtime? Because trust me, you had downtime. There ain't nowhere to go when you feel the way you feel. And if there was anything you did that you can pass on to listeners, never let that downtime ever be wasted. Because I was spending a lot of time laying there, and in between moans, I would say, well, let's see, what could I do that would be really constructive? And I thought, well, I can start reviewing my memory verses. And I went through memory verse after memory verse. And it really was, it was very exciting to go through and think, I have learned and studied and memorized a lot of scripture in my life. And that really was exciting to kind of get it back in and refresh it and go through all of it. So I had a great time doing that. And if you are in the cold and flu season and you had some downtime, how did you spend it? Did you, anything you can pass on to listeners, let me know. Bill@myfaithradio.com. You can send me an email and I will share it with our listeners, because you have a whole big chunk of time when you don't feel good and you feel sorry for yourself. And there you go. So I found this kind of interesting. The drive-through line on opening day at the McDonald's restaurant in Kuwait City, Kuwait, was at times 7 miles long. So what do you do? Do you get in line for lunch on Tuesday so you can order dinner Wednesday? I don't think I would ever wait in a line 7 miles long for McDonald's. Anyway, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, who helps me fight evil using charm, wit, and a never-ending assortment of gadgets, Patrick Albanese, is on the line. Just so you know, that description also worked for the agents in the Man from U.N.C.L.E. series. We'll take a short break and be back with Patrick in just a minute.
Well, my bills are getting higher and my paycheck is getting lighter, but I'll take it a day at a time. First of the month keeps it coming up much too much, but I'll make it.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could...
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
I know that music makes you happy as it makes me happy. And of course, that belongs to Patrick Albanese. You know, I've already gotten a submission from a listener who said, how I dealt with cold. They said it will run its course in 2 weeks. But I pounded the vitamin C, slept a lot, and got through it in only 14 days.
And that, you know something? I'm going to take that advice. Whoever that list is. Yeah. Genius.
Yeah, that is genius.
And of course, hey, anything to cut a couple of minutes off of the cold. I had it. It was not fun.
Yeah, it's no fun. So you're just back from watching the Gorilla Channel.
24/7 Gorilla Channel.
Nice.
Oh, was that not just the funniest darn thing, that Michael Wolff book comes out, you know, saying that, you know, Trump is crazy, and somebody completely trolls the press and says, you know, puts out a thing that says that here's an excerpt from the book, that when he got to the White House first day, he's like, where's the Gorilla Channel? And they couldn't find the Gorilla Channel, so they put together videos of gorillas, and he wanted the gorillas fighting, and they just would run it 24/7. And it was, of course, one of those stories that was too good to check. And so there were reporters, supposedly credentialed or, you know, supposedly objective reporters, that they didn't bother to check, and they ran with it. They go, this guy is completely crazy. There is no Guerrilla Channel. And people started contacting Netflix going, hey, where is this Guerrilla Channel?
Oh, that's too funny. Going,
we don't have a Guerrilla Channel. There is no Guerrilla Channel. But I got a feeling that anytime soon, if you're out there and you want to make some quick cash, I think the Guerrilla Channel is the way to go.
So one of the leading psychiatrists that's saying Donald Trump is crazy is Bandy Lee.
Yes.
And she's a forensic psychiatrist.
Yeah, which I don't know. Forensics. Okay. First off, I want to petition that she adds an R to her name because I cannot deal with this whole Bandy thing.
Mm-hmm.
It should be Brandy. But yeah, she's a psychiatrist. Does that mean she can prescribe?
Yes, she can. Medication.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm wondering if maybe she's taken some on her own. Don't know. But she's decided to armchair quarterback, and this seems to be the new theme since the Russia thing seems to be kind of disappearing. It's like, let's go back to what works. Crazy works. Let's just start calling the guy crazy. I mean, it starts out with, you know, hey, Trump rigged the election. It's like, okay, he didn't rig the election, but you know, he is Hitler. It's like, all right, he's not Hitler, but he did collude with Russia after all. All right, it's turning out he didn't collude with Russia, but, you know, he doesn't seem to like the press. And by the way, we think he's mentally incompetent because he wants to watch the Guerrilla Channel. And an internet doctor has diagnosed him as crazy. And to think that we would, actually allow somebody like that to go visit senators and they would take her advice and say, you know what? She looked at him on some video clips and we should impeach the guy. I don't think that's the world we want to live in, whether you like the guy or not. You don't want to set that precedent.
So, it's Patrick, let's dissect some of what's going on with the collusion, and that they sent out some phony dossiers and some documents that would suggest there's a mole in the organization.
There's got to be, you know, I mean, like any organization, you're going to have people that are maybe for the new management, and there are people that are for the old management.
Right.
And so the Obama administration might be the old management. And, you know, it sure seems like, you know, the more time passes, the Comey firing is looking like that was a smart move. And it may actually turn out that it was a smart move to wait to fire him, because it's possible a trap was set to see just how deep this deep state thing is running. There have got to be a few guys that they would call, say, the white hats. That there are a couple that come to mind. This Inspector General, this Michael Horowitz, who took over the job, I think, roughly 2012. In 2011, the previous Inspector General left or was let go, and the Obama administration with Loretta Lynch strangled. They changed the rules for the inspector general. They said instead of the inspector general being able to look into whatever, wherever they smelled fishy business, they had to get the permission of Loretta Lynch, and she would turn this guy down. So Trump comes in, and the rule gets lifted, because a lot of people are saying, well, why all of a sudden? Why didn't they dig this dirt up over the last, you know, this inspector general? Why is it all happening now? Well, this guy opened his investigation January 12th of last year. Right about a week before Trump took over, because the rules got relaxed, the Senate opened it up. It was one of their last things, and Obama went ahead and signed it, walked away from the position, from his job as president, and this guy started digging. And it's highly possible that he's quite the white hat, and for, you know, 4 years under Obama was quite frustrated that he couldn't look into anything that he saw. For instance, these fishy FISA warrants that got the Trump tower wiretapped. I remember he caught a lot of grief for that when he said, you know, I've been wiretapped. So he's potentially white hat. And then there's this Admiral Mike Rogers, and he's the NSA director, I believe. So he was also throttled a little bit by Obama and Lynch. They actually tried to get him removed at some point in time. And he paid a visit to Trump Tower. He did not announced that he was going. He didn't tell the Obama administration he was going, but he made a visit there in December to visit the transition team. The transition team was working out of Trump Tower, which was wiretapped, and people didn't know this at the time. And the day after his visit, Trump moves the entire transition team out of Trump Tower, his place, into some place in New Jersey. And about a week later is when Trump put out his little tweet that said, "I can't believe I've been wiretapped by the Obama administration." So it makes you think that this Admiral Rogers might have pulled this guy aside and said, "Look, you know, whatever your policies, whatever is going on, this is wrong. You're wiretapped. You might want to get out of here." It sure looks like that. So there might be a couple of guys that, you know, might have pulled Trump aside and said, you know, whether we agree with you or not, there are bad things going on and they are after you.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to change your tactics.
Yeah. And Patrick, James Comey certainly changed his tactics. We're going to talk about that after the break. And his assertion of Hillary Clinton was that she was conducting in criminal activity with her carelessness.
He only brought it up 5 times in one letter.
Talk about that when we come back. It's 16 minutes after the hour. I'm speaking to my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. Be back in just a minute. It's 18 minutes after the hour, and welcome to your Monday. Bill Arnold here on the studio line with my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, Patrick Albanese. Patrick, we are still enjoying some of the conversation about the James Comey and his 6 times he said that Hillary Clinton was grossly negligent.
Yeah.
And then his tune changed.
Yeah, it's interesting because he drafted a letter roughly March of 2016, and then he sent it around to some of his cohorts. It's always the same handful of guys, the ones that seem to work on the Clinton email investigation, which also worked on the Russia investigation, which are now working coincidentally on the Trump-Russia collusion investigation with the special counsel, Robert Mueller. So you go, golly, the FBI only has these 6 people. They got James Comey, and they've got that Peter Strzok and his mistress, and Andrew McCabe, Andrew Weissman, mm-hmm. who completely botched the Enron investigation. All of that got overturned. And he does the midnight raids on people. They were the ones that went into Paul Manafort's house mm-hmm. at 6 a.m. with guns a-blazing and woke him up to do what? I don't think the guy was a threat to leave the country, but that's one of their tactics. So it's always the same people. He sends this memo about and multiple times mentions in the memo grossly negligent. This just came out last week. And then, you know, some edits are made to that grossly negligent, that's actually sort of a criminal statute. And that would mean, hey, she committed felonies. So if we could just change that to darn incompetent, you got to give grandma a break kind of wordage, which they did. And of course, let's not forget that this, you know, and that I think by the time that circulated and the edits were made, that was roughly May. And then just a couple of months later, they finally got around to interviewing Hillary Clinton. But the exoneration letter was already done. It had already been edited to get rid of the stuff that was actually a criminal charge. And so you go, this is certainly looking like you guys, you were determined to get her, you know, removed from any responsibility for this. They interview her, no recordings, not under oath. It's all very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
They got Michael Flynn. They did a sneak interview with him. They had been wiretapping him. And then they said, hey, we want to swing by the White House, just talk to you about some stuff. And they just caught him, you know, when they say he lied, it's like he just gave a different story. You know, with the FBI, it seems like you could say it was June. It's like, aha, when we wiretapped you, you said July, you lied. You're going to jail for the rest of your life. It's amazing, the standards.
Yeah.
So, I think it was a lot easier when you mentioned Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, I think what was their evil organization? They had to fight Thrush.
Thrush, yes.
You know? Yeah, you know, James Bond had to fight Spectre, and Maxwell Smart had to fight Chaos. I mean, it was a lot easier when they had kind of a cool acronym.
I kind of agree.
Yeah.
So the guy who took a cell phone shot of a retired nuclear sub is in jail, and yet Huma Abedin is still shopping at Bloomingdale's.
That's right. Well, it's only 18 classified emails so far that they have found on her husband's laptop and classified information that she forwarded to her Yahoo account.
That's unbelievable, Patrick.
Yeah.
And that's Yahoo unbelievable. You cannot do that.
You know, not only that, but, you know, a number of years ago, not that many years ago, but, you know, Yahoo was one that said, we got hacked. And it wasn't some of our emails. It was all of them. Pretty much anybody who has a Yahoo account got hacked. And it's so ridiculous. I have a military friend, and I go, how do these, you know, secured compartmentalized facilities work? And he says, well, you know, you can't really bring anything in or out. You know, the computers inside there, they don't have a USB drive, and you can't forward an email off of a secure network onto an unsecured network. It has to be to yet another secured network. They have to kind of stay in this highly secured network. So you're not supposed to bring cameras in. You can't take pictures of computer screens. There's no printer. You can't print stuff out. Yet somehow or another, a bathroom basement server is allowing the maid to print out classified information at Hillary Clinton's home and Huma Abedin's husband, Anthony Weiner, in between texting underage girls, is having secured classified emails forwarded via Yahoo accounts to his home laptop. I mean, there's a guy takes a picture, he's in jail, and these people, they go, you know, you got to cut him some slack. She didn't mean to do it.
Mm.
So
yeah, she wasn't aware of it, was she? She didn't know what she was doing.
Oh, the smartest woman in the world. Remember, you always have to balance things. Mm-hmm. It's reminded of, you know, George Bush was supposedly a complete moron, yet he managed to orchestrate 9/11 and plant explosives in the Twin Towers to bring him down without anybody noticing. So, plus, he vanished a plane load full of people because they say, no, a plane did not fly into the Pentagon. That one was hijacked and taken somewhere, and those people are living somewhere in Malaysia, starting new families or something like that. And George Bush orchestrated that. But don't forget, he's not very bright.
Mm-hmm.
And Hillary Clinton's a genius, yet she had no idea what she was doing with the email. I say she, of course, knew what she was doing. But, yeah, you know, I don't work for Chaos or Spectre, so
mm-hmm.
I lack credibility.
Yeah. So the 25th Amendment still being bantered around quite a bit, and maybe this will stop, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm now supposed to understand from this book that Trump he can't read, yet you plant him in front of a teleprompter, and either he's reading the teleprompter or he has managed to memorize a 30-minute speech, and he does it every single day. So I'm not buying the can't read thing. I'm not buying, you know, it's like, okay, so the guy who didn't even want to win, who's mentally incompetent, beat the smartest woman in the world, who spent twice as much money, who had the media on her side, I give up. He can't be stupid if he beat her, or she's mm-hmm. just that bad of a candidate. So
he actually took down two political empires. He took down the Clintons and he took down the Bushes.
I think
he pretty much single-handedly ended the Bush era, defeating Jeb.
And isn't that putting on the resume? Clintons.
That's got to be worth something on the resume.
I would put that on the resume, you know, right next to I was chief coffee, you know, gopher for the Tonight Show staffer.
Uh-huh.
For like and one day.
I'm curious, did you watch any of the Golden Globes last night?
I can't do that to myself.
I can't either.
I saw some of the excerpts from the Oprah thing, and she kind of glazed over the, you know, Hollywood has a sexual assault problem and started bringing up, you know, some case from 70 years ago going, these white men attacked a black woman. And you go, yep, that's all horrible stuff. Excuse me a second. Does the name Harvey Weinstein mean anything to you? I think what's going to be great is, you know, you hear these statistics that 1 in 4 women are sexually assaulted. But if you take the Hollywood, if you take the Golden Globes factor out of it, it drops to like 1 in 30. So mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, I think if Hollywood can clean up its act, we're going to make great strides, because that seems to be a bastion of this problem.
Yeah, it really, really does.
Yep.
So I know you've got some Democratic hopefuls flocking to Iowa. I don't even want to talk about that because we're out of time, but we'll talk about that next time we chat.
Sounds great. Thanks.
Have a great day.
You too.
Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll take a short break and be back with a little bit of Lighten Up. It is 1:30. Good morning. Happy Monday. Wouldn't it be nice to talk to Dr. Linda Mental and find out about your New Year's resolutions? And you'll find out why she doesn't make them. So stay tuned. We'll talk to her at about 20 minutes to the hour. But for now, we'll take a break for news. Good morning. It's 25 minutes until the top of the hour. You know, Christians need to have a solid, secure understanding of their faith in an ever-changing world. Here's Anne Graham Lotz.
We need to know what we believe. We need to know why we believe it. We need to be rooted in God's Word. We need to not only establish a personal, permanent love relationship with God through faith in Jesus, but we need to develop it until it's the core of our lives, until that's our heartbeat. Because that's the only thing that's going to carry us through some of this that's coming, and it's going to get worse. I think persecution is coming. I think ISIS may come. I think we're looking at maybe an economic collapse this year. Jonathan Kahn, Rabbi Kahn, is predicting there'll be an economic collapse, he thinks, by September 13th. Joel Rosenberg is on a book tour right now with his book, The Third Target, that talks about just what happens if ISIS wins. He paints a scenario if ISIS is not defeated. And there are things that God is warning us, and he's laying out the signs, and God's people, I think some of us are so afraid we're in denial. Others of us are just so complacent and apathetic because we've got so many responsibilities of life, and the devil will make sure that we're so busy, 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 and have so many things coming at us that we can't see the big picture. So we're living in a very dangerous time, but a very strategic time from God's perspective, and a time when it's of the essence that we are alert, we're in prayer, and we can seize those opportunities to share the gospel, to encourage somebody in their faith, to stand strong.
That was Anne Graham Lotz. If you want to hear that full interview, head over to myfaithradio.com. One of the downsides of having a little bit of a cold that lingers is brain fog. Huh. So anyway, Dr. Linda Mental is next, but our good friend Ruth Kramer is next. We'll take a short break and connect with Ruth in just a minute.
You've heard it said, it doesn't matter what you believe as long as you're sincere. This is Jim Garlow, and that's one of the most ludicrous statements I've ever heard. I'm here to tell you it does matter what you believe, not about what I say or think, but about what God says, what he thinks. Well, a lot of people say that they believe in God, but they act as if he doesn't exist. They say they believe in God, but there's no commitment to what he says in his word. They say, I believe in him, yet they violate his ways. They believe in God, but they don't want to be with him. They don't want to obey him. Listen up. It does matter what you believe about God. The Bible describes God with the Hebrew word Adonai, Lord, the boss, the one in charge. And if God's in charge, guess who isn't? This is Jim Garlow, and there's always more of these kind of stories at jimgarlow.com.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
It is 22 minutes until the top of the hour, and of course that theme music belongs to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. She comes to us via Skype. Good morning, Ruth. Good morning, Ruth. I think you're there. Maybe not. Anyway, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News is hopefully going to be joining us real soon. She's got all kinds of updates in the new year. And it's interesting that Ruth, or Anne Graham Lotz, was talking about ISIS, and it's on the run. And it's still viable, but it's down, but it's not fully out. And although it has been largely decimated from what has gone on with the Trump administration sort of lightening up on how the military can conduct themselves with ISIS, and it has done a tremendous job of reducing them. And I know Ruth is going to have an interesting take on that. 97% of the ISIS-held territory in Syria and Iraq have been liberated. Now, to me, that's just an amazing statistic, because ISIS in Syria and Iraq is like, that's where the heart of ISIS is. And to think that 97% of it has been liberated is pretty stunning. Now, we're going to even ask the question then, is ISIS even still as relevant? So I think what we're going to do is try to reconnect with Ruth. I think we'll just take a very, very short break, just a 30-second break, and see if we can't connect with her. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We'll take a very short break and then try to connect with Ruth in just a minute.
It's encouragement and hope for your daily journey.
It puts me in a good spot when I get to work, that I can serve my customers more patience and kindness. Helps me to learn and look at myself, reflect on what I could improve on. Then sometimes need that meet the message, and just kind of depends upon what's going on in my life. Great lessons.
Connecting your faith to everyday life. Faith Radio.
All right, it's 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Ruth Kramer is just joining us now via Skype. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning. You know, technology is great when it works.
I know. I love it. So Happy New Year. This is the first time we've had a chance to talk this year. I hope you had a nice holiday and all that. Yeah, yeah.
I did. Thank you.
Well, terrific. And then do you have any plans for the new year? Do you have any resolutions? Because I'm talking to Dr. Linda Mintel after you, and she says she doesn't make resolutions. Do you?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Those are just things that I think for me are not the appropriate tools to kind of govern where I'm going for the year. I'm not going to say that I have a theme word that I go by every year, but the one that seems to keep popping up over and over again for our household is the word abide. And so we're going to be just kind of trying to, you know, shape and pair what we do with our schedules and how we spend our time and the relationships that we're nurturing with that word in mind.
Sounds like a strategy, and strategies work.
I like having a plan. It works.
Yeah, yeah. So right before you came on, I was talking about just the difference in what is going on with ISIS-held territory in Syria and Iraq. It's been pretty liberated, 97% done. Pretty cool.
It's good news. It's great news, especially for the folks that are, you know, trying to head back home and see what's left and rebuild their lives. But I wouldn't say that you can discount ISIS at all. There have been a lot of different tools that have been used to try to minimize what they're doing, to restrict them, to cut them off from financial resources. But they're really not something, an organization that can be discounted at this point.
Well, what else are they going to do if they don't, they're not, what else is ISIS going to do if they're not going to be fighters?
Well, they are going to be fighters. There's
still
an ongoing insurgency. You know,
they're not going
still
away.
Threatening, right. They're still threatening anyone who has a different ideology, and they're moving out of certain areas where they had initially claimed them as strongholds. So we're seeing them pop up in other places. We're seeing ISIS take credit for terror attacks in Egypt now, which is kind of a new thing. There have been there's been an ongoing insurgency in northern Egypt for quite some time, and they've been connected to the Muslim Brotherhood. But there are more and more ties now between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic State. So now you have an insurgency that's starting to build again in another area. You've got different kinds of things that are cropping up in South Asia, Southeast Asia, and the influence that they have isn't going away because the ideology matches so many of the ideologies that are in some of these countries that have extremists to fight. You know, one of the things that we're talking about is that we have mentioned multiple times in these discussions, is that ISIS, while it is a political ideology, what we're really looking at is spiritual warfare. And until Christ comes again, we're always going to be facing some kind of an enemy that is trying to stamp out the hope and truth of Jesus Christ. It, mm-hmm. it may not look like this, but in this case, this is why we're saying don't discount ISIS, because they're deeply rooted in around the world. They're deeply rooted because of what they take over when they actually get into an area. And it's going to be really difficult to change that, because you're talking about a change of heart. And the only thing that usually changes a heart is supernatural. So, you know, this is something where we've talked with Open Doors and Voice of the Martyrs in Canada and U.S., and a number of other organizations that are dealing with the persecuted church, where they're saying these kinds of things are really spiritual warfare. And so when we ask you to pray, we're asking you to put on your armor and basically join the fight. You know, there's a lot of different ways that we as believers can respond to something like this. Initially, you know, this story that we're talking about, ISIS, whether it's a threat in the past or in the future, it's a call to prayer more than anything else. And there's a call to action as well. So organizations like Voice of the Martyrs and Open Doors have a lot of ways people can volunteer to help in the U.S. And really in support in the U.S. will allow the organizations to continue to get behind people that are doing the on-the-ground work in some of these areas where we cannot go. So what they're saying is, you know, help them help the people on the ground, on the front lines, advocate. If you're talking about these kinds of things, there's a lot of believers who still don't know what God is doing around the world. So be informed. You know, our discussions, I appreciate, because you're allowing your listeners to kind of get a feel for what's behind the headlines, to get to know a little bit more beyond what seems to be a very heavy story, to see the story of hope. And that is our call to action and what we can be doing, because we have a lot of resources. Not only are we resourced financially, but we have resources spiritually that allow us to come alongside a body of Christ that is really under pressure around the world, especially in places like Iraq and Syria and anywhere where you have an ISIS insurgency. So, you know, volunteer, advocate, you can give. Financial resources are always great. And, of course, there's always prayer. You know, we have some prayer requests that are listed on the story. We would also encourage you to go to Open Doors and sign up to some for those lists. Voice of the Martyrs has some good lists as well. And one of our sister resources, prayercast.com, will allow you to download a video. It's a 3 to 5 minute video that has someone from that country praying for the needs of that country. You're seeing his home country in the background. And as he prays for his country, let's say you've got someone who's praying for Syria. When he says Syria needs Jesus, it takes on a completely different meaning than when you or I say Syria needs Jesus. So yeah. I would encourage you to take, you know, advantage of some of these tools and continue to pray, because ISIS isn't going away simply because this is a spiritual battle.
Absolutely. Ruth, let me take a short break. And when I come back, I mean, some prayers have been answered. Evangelicals in Iraqi City for the first time really celebrated Christmas in a special way. I want to talk about that when I return. I'm talking to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. It is 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Welcome back to the show. 11 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm speaking to Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News. She always brings us up to date on what's happening around the world. And Ruth, there was a reason to celebrate with Iraqi Christians, really for the first time in a while. And I think the Christmas celebration lasted through about January 6th, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, you're talking about the Coptic Church, so they operate on a little bit of a different calendar. But, you know, we were talking about ISIS and the influence and what's been happening, and the fact that they've been pushed out of parts of Iraq and Syria means that cities like Kirakash, Erbil, and Dohuk have been kind of released from the occupation of ISIS. And so people are coming back. Now, in a lot of these areas, specifically Kirakash, you were considered Christian by just simply because you weren't Muslim. So there were a lot of people who were called Christian by name only. And when ISIS came in, they swept everybody out in front of them. They were, you know, killing people who didn't share their ideology, which, you know, it could have been anybody, just anybody that wasn't an extremist. So a lot of these people were pushed into refugee camps, which is where Christian Aid Mission comes into the picture. They had teams that were going into these refugee camps and just bringing the humanitarian aid to survive. But they also brought people who were willing to listen to stories, who had time to develop relationships with these people who were really shaken up and asking a lot of questions. And so these relationships developed, and a lot of these ministry workers came back with stories of how they had opportunities to share the gospel. Well, in this case, in this story that we were talking about on our website, one of the Christian workers came into contact with a man named Nassim, who had fled ISIS from his city, Kirakash, and he ran into one of these aid workers in a refugee camp who led him to Christ. And then he also was discipled in that camp. So once the city was liberated, Nassim went back home and began rebuilding his house, and then just began sharing his story, sharing his hope in Jesus with people who are also coming back. And before long, he actually led a number of people to Christ. And so they had a small church going in Kirakash. And so they were meeting together as a small evangelical church in Kirakash, probably for the first time since ISIS came through. And they started doing that in the beginning of December. So these are all new believers who are for the first time celebrating the birth of Christ openly.
Whoa.
Now, because the Coptic Christians celebrate Christmas on January 6th, mm-hmm. they decided to go ahead and celebrate their Christmas on January 6th. So it's for the first time since the city has been liberated, since ISIS came through, evangelical believers celebrated openly the birth of Christ.
Oh, that's a big celebration, Ruth. That makes me happy. My heart just fills with joy.
It's kind of an amazing thing when you see what God turns around.
No kidding.
You know, these are things that are just absolutely amazing because there's still risk. There's still, you know, danger to openly identify as a follower of Jesus Christ in areas like this. And they're being bold. So a lot of times when we talk about the pressure that the body of Christ faces when looking at ISIS, when looking at these radical ideologies, one of the things that these believers are asking for on a consistent basis is pray that their faith remains strong. Pray that they'll be bold in sharing their hope in Christ. So that's what we're asking. I mean, obviously there are other needs that they have because they're rebuilding their lives. So, you know, Christian Aid Mission is in there kind of supporting partners that are working there. So there's obvious need for resources. There's obvious need for manpower. You know, Christian Aid Mission obviously is going to make the call on whether or not you can send teams in. Right now it's probably not a great time, but there's still a need for advocacy and things like that, advocacy, I should say, and things like that about what's happening in places like Iraq. In stories like this that need to be out there just to say things are changing, and they're changing for the better. It's a drop in the bucket, but you can see what a ripple effect that has.
Even when you say things that we sort of brushed over a little bit, like ISIS had driven him from his home, and then he came back to try to rebuild. Those are pretty significant events in a person's life. And yet he comes back with the joy of the Lord and wants to share his hope and faith with others. And then they start a church, and then the body of Christ starts new. It's powerful.
It is. It is, you know, it feels a little bit like what happened in Acts with the beginning of the church all over again. You know, you had something that was meant to destroy the body of Christ before it ever got started. And then you had something change in a heart. It was supernatural change. And then you come back and you see that just start to take root and it grows. People are searching for hope, and the hope of Jesus Christ is what they respond to. True walking with Jesus hope is something that is very attractive to everyone around us.
Yeah. Ruth, talk a little bit about what's going on in Iran right now with Sat-7.
Wow. Iran is kind of on a cusp of change. They have had quite an interesting introduction to the new year. Really, it kind of started with the rise in the price of eggs, and the next thing you know, you've got 7 days of national riots. A lot of what happened was that people were getting really fed up with the lack of employment for the youth. Some of the foreign policy came into effect, social justice issues, individual freedom. The government started cracking down on social media and blocking certain access to sites. So information and freedom of speech was being squelched, political intolerance. And a group of young people started protesting. And that just kind of spread to until, you know, you had a national kind of a protest. At the end of it, you had a couple dozen people who were killed. You've got 1,000 people who've been arrested. You know, and these protests spread to like 80 cities and towns. So it's a significant number of people who are saying, we don't like what's happening here. And you have Iran's Revolutionary Guard squelching it. They have claimed now that they've put an end to the protest. But you've got the president saying that it's a situation where people should be allowed to have freedom. So Iran's guard is basically blaming the U.S., blaming Israel, but blaming Saudi Arabia for the unrest. And the president of Iran is saying, well, that's a misrepresentation of events. It's kind of an insult to people to say that it's only economic demands. It's only outside pressure. There's change that needs to happen from within. So it's kind of at a very uneven place. And so organizations like Sat7 is a satellite Christian satellite television ministry to the Middle East and North Africa. They're bringing in an opportunity for people to ask questions, to kind of discuss things, to hear what clerics are saying, and to have those questions answered from a Christian worldview.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of opportunity here with Sat7 PARS. They're just asking that you pray wisdom for the presenters as they're answering these questions, that they answer wisely, and that it points people to Christ.
Yeah. Ruth, thanks so much for being on the program. Happy New Year once again, and I'll talk to you again real soon.
Happy New Year.
Thanks so much. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one. Thanks to Ruth Kramer and Patrick Albanese. So nice to have you in the first hour. Dr. Linda Mintel is up next. New Year's resolutions, why she doesn't make them, why they work or don't work, and strategies to keep them. That's all ahead in hour two. And just be back in a minute.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.